DPO, NTDO 212, comm check.
DPS, go. Inco, go. PUS, go. Surgeon, go. Booster, go. Copy that, we have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
I can still hear Mama say everybody's not your friend. Then I'm standing at the finish line cheering on for you to win. In this life, you're sure to find someone to pull you down. They hate to see the smile you wear on your face. Oh, can't stand to see your head in the clouds.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Talking Sound Podcast. I am Chris Jordan, your host. The track you're listening to is Ready or Not by the artist Christina Wells. Today on the program, we are so happy to welcome executive producer of this project, Billy Dorsey, to the show to talk about its inception, its creation, how it came to be, and of course the production behind the amazing track Ready or Not by Miss Christina Wells. How are you doing today, Billy?
I am wonderful, Chris. How are you?
Doing great, man. May I just say, number one, hold on, I just got to hear this epic guitar line. That's just so sick. You do not hear guitar that sounds like that much anymore. And oh my God, it is just so entirely gorgeous sounding. Tell us a little bit, about you. I mean, I've known you for years now, Billy. We work together professionally, outside of the studio doing things other than music. But to see where you have come to now, with production, everything else, to be working with people like Christina on tracks like Ready or Not, amazing production, beautiful, beautiful arrangement and composition. Tell our audience a little bit about how it was that you came to music to begin with, and how you came to be, I guess, involved with this project.
Sure. Music for me is a second language. You know, most children learn a second language very young. And for me, I learned music in the church. My parents are pastors, so I grew up singing, writing songs, and really falling in love with music first in the choir and getting that experience. And then early teens, started singing in groups. Signed my first record deal to sing when I was 19 years old in college at Louisiana Tech. Moved to Houston, started working on my first album, and although the album with the group didn't go well, God used that as an opportunity to bless me to become successful, first as a songwriter and a producer, and then later as an artist.
And you have had the incredible, and I mean literally, folks, one of the most incredible journeys I know in or out of the music industry, just personally and in life. And that is the root of a lot of your inspiration for writing, a lot of your inspiration for composition. The message behind Ready or Not is so absolutely necessary in our world of bullying, in our world of body shaming, everything else that's going on in our society right now. Where did the inspiration for Ready or Not come from, Billy?
Well, I was brought into the project by Nicholas Johnson, phenomenal music producer and somebody that I've worked with as a musician. He's an incredible bass player. He brought me into the project as the songwriter on Ready or Not. And my first day in the studio to write the song was also my first time meeting Christina Wells. I'd seen, you know, all the video clips and news interview links from her being on America's Got Talent and all the success that she'd had, but I didn't want to look her story up. My first time sitting down with her in the studio, I asked her, Christina, tell me your story. What do you want to say to people? What's the message that you want people to receive when they hear a song by Christina Wells, because this was actually her first ever original song.
Oh, wow.
And the lyrics of the song are pretty much her story. They are her talking about how she was shamed as a child for being too loud, or people making fun of her weight, opportunities that she lost, and the judgment that she faced. You already referenced fat shaming earlier, body shaming. So the things that she went through in her journey, from people judging her from being who she was, and her finally owning it and saying, you know what, I am this. And you're not going to put me in your box. You're not going to limit me. I'm not going to be held prisoner to your insecurities, but I am going to be who I am unapologetically, and you're going to accept me. I'm coming, ready or not. And that's where the song came from.
And like I said, such a beautiful and necessary message in today's society, the message behind the track, Ready or Not. What was it like the first time that you actually met Christina? Because I mean, a lot of people collaborate with their own group of musicians, things like that. And of course, whenever you do as much studio work as you do, Billy, you know, there's always that, yeah, let me bring this guy in on piano. He's the one that we need for this feel, that kind of stuff. But how was it working with Christina on virgin ground, you know, first real time out doing anything like this with her?
You know what? It was a joy. I say that because far too often when you go in the studio with somebody who already has a name or who's already had a measure of success, they have their guards up and they have already formed their persona. This is who I want the world to see me as. Not this is who I really am, but this is what I want the world to perceive or to receive from me. Christina didn't come into the studio with any of that. We immediately connected our first time sitting down together. And she started sharing some things from her childhood that I know were painful for her. You know, she shed some tears in the studio while she was telling me some of the stories of some of the things that she went through to make sure that I really understood what she wanted to say. And the greatest thing for me is Christina, her message is not just for her. It's for all the kids who have some element of what she's gone through in them. So any kid who's being now told, you're too big, you're too loud, you're too this, you're too that, go sit down, be quiet, nobody cares about your opinion. All of those kids can find themselves in Christina because she sees herself in them. And that was a joy. I love working with artists who they're not afraid to be vulnerable musically. And she absolutely was.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a beautiful way to put it, Billy, to be vulnerable musically. Because mm-hmm. all too often we don't, come at a project with number one, that childlike vigor.
Right.
I mean, even I myself with the projects that I do, things like that, it can be hard to come at all of them with the same like vigor. That's the only way right. I can put it, you know, the same amount of energy, and to find an artist, like you said, that is not jaded with a process.
Right.
has not already put up that guard of, this is my persona. This is who I am. I need my blue M&Ms. You know, you know, all the things that come with that.
Right.
It can be totally different. And it's great that, you had the opportunity to have this beautiful experience with her. How long did y'all work together? How long was the writing process for the song itself?
Oh, the song was written in less than 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
And we actually recorded a reference of the song that first day. And then my songwriting and production partner, his name's Jay Tell. He's one of the most gifted vocal arrangers and vocal producers in the industry. He came into the studio the next day, heard what we'd done, did an arrangement for the song, that the version that you hear now. And then he started working with Christina to re-record the vocals to that vocal arrangement. But if you count the time that it took her to share her story with me and the time that it took for me to actually format that into song lyrics that were palatable and poetic, but also still powerful, 2 hours tops, if that.
Wow. Wow. And that's just a testament to just skills. Like I said earlier, incredible skills. I myself have had the opportunity to just spot cut some stuff with you in the studio. And man, just the experience of that and seeing you work and seeing how fluidly and calmly you work with things, especially with the environment here in my home studio. It's great, but it's a process. It's something that you have to kind of learn to step into, that driver's seat of production. About when in your career did, aside from your own music, Billy, did you start stepping into the realm of producer and wearing that hat for other artists and labels that you knew?
To be honest, I started there. After I signed the record deal, and when I say that, I grew up as a singer and a songwriter. Those were always my two. Those went hand in hand for me. Producer started after I signed the record deal that I signed when I was in college. When the deal went bad, I could not legally sing for 7 years. That was the terms of the contract. It was 3 albums or 7 years, whichever came first. And when the label froze our contract out, I could not sing for 7 years. So during that time, I honed my skill as a producer. And the thing that helped me to become established in the industry was not my vocal ability, it was my songwriting. And then that led to the production work that led to Billboard charting, you know, success and things like that. And that made people care enough to pay attention to me as a singer again. So it all came full circle.
Yeah. And it, you know, it's interesting that you say that that's the way it went down, because not many people realize that those things are in a contract, you know, like that is always the artist's dream, is to get that piece of paper, you know, to get that contract with a label, or with a conglomerate of labels. And not many people realize that, you know, aside from the possibility of being locked in for like 2 or 3 albums, where even if your band technically breaks up, you still got to make it or pay them. that there come clauses like that, where it's like, you know, you're singing for us for the next 7 years, or you're not singing at all.
Right. That's right.
And, good on you for, plying your trade, for finding another avenue for your trade. So many times, and it's the story here on Talking Sound so many times that, people are looking for that one break, and when it doesn't happen, they leave an industry. Because if it doesn't pan out that way, then it's not going to pan out. Imagine where you would be had you given up that many years ago, Billy, when it all went south and you were just like, you know what? I'm done. I'm cooked, man.
Right.
You know,
That's right.
I'm not going through that again. You know, I'm not even going to give another in for that to happen.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, it's strange. I mean, that's one reason why I do the corporate AV thing, and I've come to love it above all else. Because, yeah, like, I love what I do, and to be able to challenge myself on the daily the way that makes me do it, to me, is fun. And now I'm getting paid for fun. But so many people... when they get out of school, when they get out of Full Sail, when they get out of these recording programs, are stuck on the idea of being the next Rick Rubin and do not know how to do anything but that. And they give up, you know, they don't understand that they may have to step in and wear a different hat for a little while, for a couple few years till they get to that point. And it can be frustrating.
Right.
Aside from, of course, sticking to your guns, what advice would you give somebody that is looking to get into the industry, either as an artist or as a producer, Billy?
I would say become well acquainted with rejection.
Yes.
Because it's going to be a big part of it, especially as you get started. And no matter how much success you have, you're still going to be rejected by people at times. It does not necessarily mean that there's something wrong with or missing from you. it could just be that the opportunity you're pursuing is not for you. And one of the things that I would say to people beyond just, you know, getting ready for and learning to embrace rejection is learn to become very comfortable with constructive criticism. Some of the most painful things that I heard early on in my career were things that criticized aspects of what I thought I was proficient in. But when I really was able to take a look at them and say, okay, is there a deficiency in my skills in this area? And saw that there was, it enabled me to spend time away from the cameras, away from the public, away from the media, and just focus on becoming better in those things. And now some of the things that people critiqued me for or criticized me for early on are some of the main things that people laud and applaud me for now. So not only become comfortable with rejection, but also embrace constructive criticism, criticism that is tendered to build you up, not something that's just meant to attack you and tear you down.
Yeah, I couldn't have said that better, Billy, because like I said, the whole reason I do what I do is because it challenges me on the daily.
That's right.
You know, it's something different all the time, every day. And to do that to yourself, to put yourself in the situation of uncomfortable, to put yourself into that new situation, is where you learn. It's where you grow. It's where the skill set that you have actively gets to expand. You know, I see you all the time, pictures of you and your wife working out, in the gym, things like that. That's when you throw the 5 pound weight on. It doesn't seem like the 5 pounds on the last 5 reps is going to make a difference, but it does. And it makes all the difference next time you go to
lift.
But you got to put yourself in that situation. Give us an example there, Billy. What was probably the first situation you remember, where somebody came up to you and said, like, hey, great job. But like, kind of gave you the sandwich. You know what I mean? The compliment sandwich, as it's called in management, where it's like, you know, you've been doing a great job lately and really killing it. But have you noticed this? And then you ended on, something good. So you've given them the constructive criticism inside of two great compliments. But what was the first time you remember getting the compliment sandwich like that with your career?
Oh, let me tell you this. I wouldn't even say that I got the bread. I think I just got the meat in the middle. Chris, early on, many years ago now, probably 10 years ago, if not longer than that, JTEL and I, we were a part of a production team called Lifeline, where we had a third member named Maestro, phenomenal piano player / producer that we worked with. I'd written a song for one of the artists that we were working with at that time that I thought was phenomenal. And this guy who was an investor came into the studio that we were working out of at the time. And we played him the records, and I'm anticipating that he's going to say, man, that's awesome. And he said, I really like the music, but that song, the lyrics are elementary. And in that instance, I hadn't done the music. All I had done was written the lyrics. And that's an example of what I'm talking about, where I had to say, you know, beyond the initial reaction is, oh my God, did he really just say that about my song? He just insulted my writing. But going beyond the offense, I had to take a look at it and say, okay, could there be any truth to his criticism?
Sure.
And what I literally did was I wrote out the lyrics to that song, and I started comparing it to the lyrics of songs that were hit songs at the time. That I really admired, and then songs from before that time that were just universally recognized and lauded as great lyrical songs. And I started comparing them, and I saw that there was a depth of metaphor that was being used, especially in that time. Everything was metaphor, whereas my song was very straightforward. If you were looking at it objectively from the outside, you could very easily say, okay, this is too straightforward. There's none of the extra creativity. There's none of the metaphorical, you know, application here. And it made me have to go back to the drawing board with my approach to songwriting. It was a hard thing for me to do, but now our songs universally from everything from our Billboard number one records to the things we've won major awards for, one of the strongest things in those songs is the lyrics.
Yeah, you're
So he didn't give...
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, he didn't give any compliment beyond just saying the music was good. So I guess that's the bread, but it went to someone else. It wasn't for me. You know, but I'm grateful for that critique, and I'm grateful that he heard that before the world got a chance to hear the music. Because when somebody tells you something in private, in your own studio, and you go and make the correction, that's okay. You can make the transformation. You can make the adjustment. But when the world hears it and sees it and critiques it and starts to tear it apart, some people never get a second chance when it comes to that. So I'm grateful for that critique. It was a blessing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and not just some people don't get a chance for a second chance. A lot of people just don't take a second chance after that critique. I remember,
that's right.
I remember years ago, my own father. I used to be on 90.1 there in Houston with all my avant-garde music, very soundscapey, very much more an experiment in sonics and sound than melody and harmony. Right. I always akined it to, if you watch a sci-fi or horror movie with no words, there's a sample of my avant-garde music. But I was on the radio with it once a month as a composer, and my dad tuned in one time with a buddy of his. Went out to work on a patio with him the next week, and he's like, "The hell was that damn music you were playing?" It's like, "Oh, that this is my last album that I wrote." He's like, "Man, you gotta write something with a beat that people can get into, man. Like, I don't know about all that." And that was about as straight critique as you could get. Where it was like, "Hey, man, if I was making music for people like you, like, oh, I don't know if I'd ever make music again. I'm doing something as a form of art here. I don't care if people find it like in a time tube 30 years from now and get into it. This is what I'm doing. But not everybody has that fortitude, Billy. Not everybody has that." That straight up attitude of Christina Wells that is so beautifully, right. So beautifully put. And I actually snipped that out. I don't want to wreck your production, but I actually snipped the part out at the end of the track, which is, I think, kind of Christina's manifesto. And like you said, very much the basis of the song, and such a beautiful message for exactly what we're talking about right now, everybody. Let's hear the words of Christina Wells herself.
The thing I've realized over time is that thing that made me different, difficult, the thing that made me stand out, it's what made me unique. I am Christina Wells. I can't be anything else. There's nothing else I know how to be. There's nothing else I want to be. I just want to be me.
And that is one of the most beautiful messages that I've ever heard a song rap with. Because it's so absolutely true. And it's such a message that, like I said earlier a couple times, I think the whole world needs to hear right now. I think we're all too much up in each other's business and need to work on ourselves. We need to work on being that way, making sure that we're comfortable with ourselves to begin with, in order to change the world around us. How does that being comfortable, like you were saying earlier, working with some people, they have walls up. What are some of the ways as a producer that you help get past those barriers with musicians, with artists? Because it can be hard whenever you're brought in as a producer by management, by label, what have you, and you're trying to give that proper critique and feedback to an artist, but the walls are up. What are some of the ways that you kind of disarm people in that situation, Billy?
Honestly, the easiest way to do it is to share my own story. one of the things that most people know me from before they ever step into the studio with me is my journey to where I am now and some of the things that I've had to go through. And I'll start that conversation by sharing a song that I was involved in or something that I wrote or produced or both and how it related to a story. And when people can see the through line from the story and being vulnerable to how it translates to a hit song, it makes it easier for them to start to unlock that a little bit. And then beyond just stuff that I've been involved in myself, you know, I'll reference artists in whatever genre, because it really applies in any genre. I'll reference artists in whatever genre this artist is working in or creating in, that artist is well known for making their story a part of their music. If they're a hip hop artist, I'll reference somebody like Eminem, who we know his daughter's name is Haley, and we know, you know, about his mom. I'm sorry, mama, I never meant to hurt you. You know, I'm cleaning out my closet. Like, we know all these different things about his journey. We knew about his failed marriage. We knew about his dad being absent. We knew about him getting beat up and, you know, getting free lunch in school, because he made these things that are his story so intrinsically a part of his music. And that is why he will go down in history, not just because of his skill, but because he took us along for the journey. You know, if I'm working with an R&B artist, I'll reference somebody like a Mary J. Blige, who she was honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award the other day at the BET Awards. Mary J. Blige is known for putting her sorrow and her struggles in relationships with men into song form. And she did that so vividly and so candidly and so, you know, using her vulnerability as such a blanket in that way, that she made it safe for women who were grieving to listen to her music to give voice to the words they couldn't say. So when you look at artists that are successful and they did it by being vulnerable, not just by being talented, but by letting the walls down, if you point that out to people, if they want to be successful, that they need to be able to do that in their own way, usually they bring the walls down at that point.
All right. Yeah. Great advice, man, to really have somebody kind of dig in a little bit and find that moment for themselves. Now, when you were working in the studio with Christina on this, how long did the actual, I know you were saying that the song was written within a couple of hours, but what was the production schedule like? Like, how long did orchestration take, everything else, and all the back end production? Is it not?
Well, to be honest, go ahead. Not a lot of listening.
Oh no, I was going to say not a lot of people realize exactly what goes into the production of just a single like this, much less an album itself.
Well, I wouldn't want to speak to the production side of it because my friend Nicholas Johnson did the production on that particular record. And when he brought me in, he pretty much already had the track done. He'd already brought in all the musicians. I think the only thing that he was still working on when I came on was he had steel pedal guitar to it. Guitar solo was already there. Piano was there. Drum track was already there. He had already done the foundational work. So I don't know what his time frame was on that. And I don't want to take any shine away from the work he put into the production because I don't know his process. I know for things that we work on to produce, I mean, it depends on if we've got all the musicians in one place where we can create it and craft it together, or if we're kind of bringing in, you know, a drummer and a bass player this day and a keyboard player that day and having somebody come in and lay guitar. You know, it just depends on the schedule. But for Ready or Not, when I came to the table, the production was already done. He'd already kind of painted the picture. All I had to do was write the captions.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, he made the walk nice and easy for you then.
Oh yeah. Super easy. Super easy. At that point, all I had to do was listen to Christina share her story, and she and I sat down and formatted the lyrics together. So I can't say I wrote the song. She and I wrote it together.
Sure.
Because even though I formatted it into song form, that's her heart and it's her words.
Yeah.
It's her message. And I just wanted to put it into a way that made it poetic and palatable for listeners.
And you do such a great job with that, Billy. As a lyricist, I mean, of course, there's being genuine, like you were saying, finding that moment in yourself that makes you vulnerable to the audience lyrically. Aside from that, for aspiring songwriters out there, Even people like myself who have a volume of work themselves, but have not taken pen to paper right. for lyrics in years. What are some of the things that you do, I guess, to regularly throw that 5 pounds extra on the last few reps? You know, what are the things that you do to keep your art limber, to keep yourself in shape as a lyricist?
Gotcha. That's a great question. I'd say for me, the biggest things are, one, I always keep the mentality of a student of the art. No matter how much success we've had or how many styles of songs we've written and had success on the charts with, I always approach everything that I listen to and everything that I'm writing or creating from the perspective of it can be better. You know, what is it that I can add to this or bring out in it or approach from a different perspective that will make this song richer, that'll make it mean more, that'll make it cut through more? Because there's so many songs. I think I read somewhere the other day that there were 30 to 40,000 songs released a week around the country. How do you make the one song that you're writing stand out in the midst of that? So one, I approach it from the perspective of a student of the art. You know, I'll never be a master. No matter how much I've accomplished or how great I might get at the art of writing, I will never believe I know everything. There's always more to learn. Number two, there's an expression that says there's nothing new under the sun. And that's very true. There's no concept you can write about that hasn't been to some degree written about before. But how do you find a unique way of saying it? One of the things I love to do when I'm working with an artist is I like to ask them, how would you say this? Not just what is the idea, what's the concept, but how would you say it? I love the idea of spending time, even if it's, you know, me with this, in the studio with Christina for an hour, hour and a half, with her just pouring out her heart, because what that helps me to do, whether the artist realizes it or not, I'm actually learning their cadence. I'm learning the way they phrase things. I'm learning the way that their mind works, so that when I'm writing, I get to kind of step out of my own perspective and look through the window of their viewpoint, you know, so that it becomes a complete paradigm shift. Instead of me looking at things and writing from how Billy would say them, I now get to step into Christina's eyes. One of my favorite books as a kid was the Dark Tower, the entire Dark Tower series, Stephen King. And in one of those books, Roland, without going down a big rabbit hole about it, if the listeners have read the books, one of the books, Roland gets to go inside of it, the three different doors for each of the people he's drawing. And he gets to go inside of the doors for each of those people. And when he does, as he's going to try to draw them into his world, he actually can see through their eyes. That ideology always stuck with me. So when I write songs, I try to write them through the eyes, through the heart, through the mind, through the way of speaking of the person. So become the person you're writing for. That would be the next thing. And then I think the last thing that I always try to approach songs from is know when enough is enough. And what I mean by that is, my first thing was, how can I make it better? And that's important. But you can go over something and try to perfect it so much till you squash the life out of it.
Yeah.
You have to know how to say that's it. That's where it needs to be. And there's an art to that. You know, and so for me, that balance of making sure I can get it as good as I possibly can, making sure that it's from the perspective of the person I'm writing for, and then making sure that I'm always a student of the art, and at the end of it, that I know when to step away from it and say, that's good enough. That's kind of my approach to writing, and it served me well.
Man, that is so simplistic and pure, Billy. And so absolutely, like, I've got goosebumps right now just hearing you talk about how you work your craft and knowing how I work mine on this end as a musician. It was like, wow, yeah, you know, know when to leave it alone. No, like, I know That's so it. Many, I know one band that was working on their album when I left Portland, Maine, and this was like a decade ago. The singer worked on vocals for a year and a half. The band was broken up when they released the album, and they released the album because we're not going to not release this album.
Right.
Like, people gave us, like, our friends gave us money to make this album, you know, and, like, yeah, to, like, rent equipment and record it ourselves. But number one, that's part of the problem with recording it yourself sometimes, is that you get caught in that loop of, I can make it better, I can make it better, I can make it better. And sometimes you just need a producer like you to go, you know what, we're cooked on the day. Let's hit this hard tomorrow, fellas, and pick up where we were four bars ago. you know, and there is an art to that. Like you said, there is a definite art to knowing when to back away and go, looks good.
That's it.
So
that's it. You know, it's the sculptor approach.
Yeah.
You got, all you got is what that clay is. So you can sculpt until you bring out. I heard somebody the other day say that you're not sculpting. You're sculpting from the, you're not sculpting from the outside in, although that's what you're physically doing. You're sculpting from the inside out in your mind's eye.
Yeah.
You're cutting away all the things that are there that shouldn't be there, rather than trying to create it going in. You're bringing out the greatness that's inside of it. But having said that, once you get too deep into that clay, that's all that, you know, what do you do at that point? You cut too deep into it. Songwriting is the same way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially when it comes to the arranging and the, you know, the, how the lyrics and the melodies have to meld together. Once it's right, you have to have, one of the greatest blessings, and I want to add this in case somebody ever needs to hear it. One of the greatest blessings to me as a writer is having my brother Jay Tell write with me. I'm the lyricist primarily. He's the vocal arranger primarily. So I'm more lyrics and he's more melody. It's kind of like the Elton John, Benny Taupin partnership type of thing.
Yeah.
The other advantage to having each of us be able to focus primarily on what makes us great or our strongest skills is that each of us trust the other to say, that's it. So if I'm unsure, I have somebody who I know hears it the way I hear it that can say, nah, B, that's it. Or I hear what you hear. Let's go a little farther.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So there's nothing wrong with having trusted collaborators who can hear what you can't hear and whose opinion you can also trust.
And I really think, Billy, as an artist myself, I've literally got a handful of those people. I have five people. My wife isn't even one of them. I love my wife dearly, but she's not going to give me the critique that I'm looking for in music, you know, she's going to tell me whether or not she likes it. But she's not going to give me the, like, I listened to it two times, but let me listen to it four more so I can really get in deep. Like that kind of criticism. And to be able to, like you said, have those trusted compatriots, in the studio and outside the studio. I myself am a big fan of, not listening to dailies. Whenever I'm done with the studio for the day, I'm not listening to the music. I'll come back in and I'll listen to things in the morning and go, okay, that's what I need to change. Cool. But when I'm done, I need to check out and let that drop away. And even like right now, I'm in the final throes of an album myself. Polishing up a couple tracks and things and sent it off to some of my friends and sent the Dropbox links off and got response back from one, and the other two were like, I've heard it twice. I need to hear it two more times. It's nice to have those people that are going to give you their honest feedback about what you're doing, and feedback that helps you grow, feedback that helps throw those extra few pounds on the last few reps.
That's it.
So as we close out here, Billy, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show today, talk about what it is to be an executive producer. I'd love to talk with you more, of course, about arrangement, composition, things like that. But what was probably your most enjoyable experience working on this project with Christina Wells for the track Ready or Not?
Honestly, my most joyful, most joyous part of the process is when we got the final mix back. Chris Godby, who's a great friend of ours now, and he's Justin Timberlake and Timbaland and Madonna and all those guys. He's their mix engineer. He is now working with the Bridge Life too. So he did the mix on this record. And when Christina heard the rough version, like the raw recordings, and she loved it. She loved the feeling. She knew she delivered, but she was still unsure because this was her first ever original song. So it's, I like this. It really feels good, but is it the one? Is it good enough? And when she heard the final version of the mix, because we went through several edits and she made notes and we made notes and sent them back, and Chris would adjust it as often happens during the mix process and send another bounce back. But when we got that last bounce of the mix back, and she called me and she was so excited. I mean, she was, you know, Christina is she has a big voice. So when she, and that's not just when she's singing. So when she called me, she's like, Billy, oh my gosh, this is incredible. Like that moment for me, when somebody has trusted you with their heart, because that's what this song is. It's her heart in a sonic form. When someone has trusted you with their heart, with their gift, with their talent, with their time, with their brand, because she is Christina Wells, the brand. This is her first ever original song, and she's trusted me to walk this journey out with her. Seeing the moment where she saw and felt the validation of the work itself, that was the sweetest moment. So the world's reception and how people are responding to it now, and all the shares and all the streams and the news interviews and things that are happening like today at KPRC, those things are wonderful, but those things kind of happen when you do something great and you've got somebody with the brand, the media, and all the streams. That stuff is a part of the process. But the intimate part, the last part of it that's just within the circle, is the mix and the master before it goes out to the world. So seeing how much she loved this thing that she was so, I mean, she's the core of it. We would not be creating this song without her. Seeing the moment where she fell in love with the finished product and with her voice and with her message, that was it for me.
Yeah, it's amazing, man. I'm so glad that you got to share that with her, because it is a special moment whenever those things start happening. And you mentioned it a while ago. We were talking about it off air, and then you just dropped it. So I have to ask, what's the Bridge Life all about?
The name The Bridge Life just means that we are the bridge between you and wherever you're wanting to go, whatever your dream is. And so it's called The Bridge Life because I live a life of trying to connect people from wherever they are to whatever they lack. For using Christina Wells, for example, Christina is a phenomenal singer who lacked original music. We're the bridge. You know, with my charity work and some of the things that I do on the ministry side, it still all falls under the Bridge Life. It's just not the music component. We are the bridge between children around the world without Bibles, for example, and getting a Bible created in their language, creating new Bible translations. You know, from the marketing and promotion side, if you've got an album that you really feel strongly about, but you need to get it out to the world, which is where marketing and promotions come in, we're the bridge between the two. If you've got a great song, but you need a visual for that so that you can really capitalize on your streams and connect with those people who never listen to the radio, but they live on YouTube, we're the bridge for that because we can direct music videos. So it just means whatever our clients are, the people that we come into contact with or partner with are missing, or whatever they need, whatever your goal or your dream is, we're the bridge between where you are and where you want to be, the Bridge Life.
Beautiful message, man. Beautiful. And, you know, I'm so glad that there are people like you out there. There are people like our other guest, College of Hip Hop Knowledge, who are out there taking these young artists literally by the hand and walking them through the process, showing them that, like you said, like Christina already, she'd already been on America's Got Talent. She's already a brand. Like you can go and check her out online, everybody. Feel free to go on to ChristinaWells.com. You can see her press kit. You can book her, all kinds of stuff. I mean, amazing. But her first time recording her own music, her first time creating an original piece of art. And that's a process. And like you were saying earlier, it's a heartfelt process. It's a process, that you really need to treat with the proper gloves. And I think Billy, you've done a beautiful, beautiful job, with the track Ready or Not and with Christina Wells. Kudos, my friend.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, my brother.
Anytime, absolutely. And as we get ready to go out here, tell everybody where they can go to find out more about your ministry, where they can go to find out more about your work, where they can go to get a hold of you to produce for them, to write for them, everything else, Billy.
Absolutely. If you are looking for someone to produce or write for you, the easiest way to connect with me is via DM, either on Instagram or Facebook. On Facebook, it's Bishop Billy Dorsey Jr., Bishop Billy Dorsey Jr. And then on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, all the rest of those, it's at BillyDTheBridge, Billy D, the Bridge. So hit me with an instant message or DM through any of those means of contact. And then via email is thebridgelife, T-H-E, bridgelife@gmail.com. And those are the easiest ways to connect with me for production, songwriting work, or just to follow what we're doing. And to follow the ministry, go to yourwordproject.org, yourwordproject.org.
All right, Billy, thank you so much for taking the time. Once again, I know that between your production work, between the ministry, between literally traveling the globe over the last year, for you to be able to take the time out for our audience means the world to me. Thank you so much for taking the time to come in, share your vast realm of knowledge. I'd love to have you come back in, talk about video production, all that kind of good stuff as well, marketing, everything else. So you're always welcome on this show, any show that we have, my friend.
Bro, it's an honor. Thank you for having me. And anytime I can be available to be here, brother, I will be.
Absolutely. Please do hold the line. While you were online checking out the great work of Bishop Billy Dorsey as well as Christina Wells, make sure to stop on by the Talking Sound Show. TalkingSoundShow.com is where you can pick it up. You can also go to TalkingSoundPodcast.com. They're mirror sites. Made it nice and easy for you to find. You can find all the episodes there. You can also find all of the news articles from industry news. You can find the freelance directory, where if you're a freelance AV guy like me, you can find companies around the country that hire you out. Make sure to check us out on the HC Universal Network, everybody. And remember, take care of yourselves. Take care of your hearing. Till next time, keep reaching for 11. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Talking Sound.